मनोबुद्ध्यहङ्कारचेतानि नाहं न च श्रोत्रजिह्वेन च घ्राणनेत्रे न च व्योमभूमिन तेजो न वायु चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न च प्राणसंज्ञो न वै पञ्चवायु न वा सप्तधातु न वा पञ्चकोशा न वा पाणिपादं न चोपस्थपायु चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न मे द्वेषरागौ लोभमोहौ मदो नैव मे नैव मात्सर्यभाव न धर्मो न चार्थो न कामो न मोक्ष चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न पुण्यं न पापं न सौख्यं न दुःखम् न मन्त्रो न तीर्थं न वेदा न यज्ञा अहं भोजनं नैव भोज्यं न भोक्ता चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं अहं निर्विकल्पो निराकाररूपो विभूत्वाच्च सर्वत्र सर्वेन्द्रियाणां न चासंगतं नैव मुक्तेर्न मेय चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूपा। 是无恒，是无恒，是无恒，是无恒，是无恒，是无恒。
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning. Welcome to our second class in The Splendid Path, discovering the divinity of your own self through the Shiva Sutras. I've been so enjoying the inquiries coming in from so many of you on the listserv, not only because of the insights and the experience and really the honesty of your sharing, but also because it's apparent that how many of you are actually doing the inquiry that the text suggests. And of course, this is why we're doing this. There are a lot of fascinating insights that we can pick up from reading a Sanskrit text like this. And for a lot of you, some of these insights are coming thick and fast. But to me, the deepest gift that we get from really engaging in a satsang like this, in an inquiry like this, is the power of Shiva, really, who's, remember, as I believe it was Dan, asked the question, what is the Shiva Sutras? It's Shiva. In other words, these sutras, the quality of these sutras, which becomes clearer and clearer to us the more deeply we get to know them, the quality of these sutras is to constantly download into anyone who can look at them deeply the vision of Shiva, the Shiva Drishti, the recognition that all of this is inside. Many years ago, a friend of mine had an experience that confused her. She'd been looking out her window, looking at the landscape, when there was a shift in her perception. You know how that happens sometimes. And she became aware that there was an intelligence watching her from inside every plant, every bush, and even from the ground. And that the same seer, the same intelligence, was also watching her from inside or from behind her mind. She said it was like that Alex Gray painting. You know, that, have you ever seen that Alex Gray painting where the great psychedelic artist Alex Gray, who painted dozens of eyes gazing out from a canvas, really as a kind of metaphor for the awareness that sees everything. So that was what my friend was seeing. But she didn't get how this was possible. First of all, she'd never really studied non-dual teachings, but she, like most of us, had a basically dualistic view of the world, and she assumed that only creatures with a brain are able to see or know or sense the world around themselves. She assumed, as most of us do, that chairs and rocks and soil are insentient, that they're simply objects without any subjectivity of their own. She had not realized that intelligence could also be present in physical objects, maybe in a plant, but certainly not in a lawn chair or a stone. So my friend had a glimpse, an opening into Shiva Drishti, the vision of Shiva, the God's eye view of the world. And she later told me about this during a Shiva Sutra study group that we were both participating in, because in reading this text, she suddenly got the meaning of her vision. She suddenly saw what had been revealed to her. So the God's eye view, the Shiva Drishti, is that whatever exists is fully present as God's awareness, taking forms. Whatever exists is inside divine awareness, which is your awareness and my awareness, because awareness is all there is. And this really quite mind-exploding vision that the Shiva Sutras incarnate is that what we experience as a world is actually being projected by Shiva Shakti, Shakti is actually doing the projection, onto a screen made of Shiva's own being, made of Shakti's own being, the way a film is projected on a screen, except that the screen is Shiva, and so is the film. So when the first sutra of the Shiva Sutras, Chaitanyam Atman, says that one awareness is the essence of this universe, part of what it means is that this entire universe is alive and sentient, and that everything is a part of everything else. And I want us to contemplate this idea for a minute or two. But several people have said that all of this information feels complicated. And it's true that when we first become introduced to the language of an Indian text, the language that it uses to describe reality can seem complicated until we get to know it. But the basic teaching is really simple. As Abhinavagupta said, everything is everything. That's basically his teaching. Everything is everything. What does that mean? Everything is everything. Everything is not only connected. Everything, I don't want to say is identical with everything else, because obviously it isn't. This is a universe of incredible multiplicity. But what he's saying is that behind that multiplicity, everything is everything, or as here, so elsewhere. And that even though every particle has its own unique qualities, it's nonetheless true that there are not two things in this cosmos. If you remember that old joke, which a seeker asks a sage what supports the world, and the sage says it's all held on the back of a huge turtle, and that turtle rests on another turtle, which rests on another turtle. And the seeker asks, what does that turtle rest on? The sage says, it's turtles all the way down. So, like the song says, it's Chidananda Rupam, consciousness and bliss, all the way down. And of course, mostly we can't see that due to the situation described in Sutra 2 of the Shiva Sutras. But what the text allows us to do is to practice seeing the world from that perspective. So let's start with our mantras. First of all, let's become aware of all of us together. There are about 100 people on this call, and many, many more of you are listening later on tonight or tomorrow when the MP3 goes up on the website. But those of us who are here now are from 6 different continents, many different time zones. We're all part of this web of connection that is our community, our Sangham. So let's for a moment find our posture, find our seat. Inhale with the feeling that the breath brings our attention to the base of the body and lets us ground through the sitz bones. And then the exhalation allows us to breathe the breath all the way through the body from the crown up to the top of the head, gently lifting the body through the spinal column. And with the next inhalation, let your attention come into the heart. And for a moment, contemplate that all of us here in this net, this web of connection that we have created together, all of us have placed our awareness into the heart, and whether we're consciously seeing that or not, all of us are touched into the thumb-sized flame that is the light of the self in the heart. So let yourself become aware of those flames around the world. And with a deep inhalation and a deep exhalation, we'll chant our mantras, beginning with the mantras to Ganesha. First, Om Ganganapataye Namaha 5 times, then the Ganesh invocation 3 times, the Mahamrityunjaya mantra 3 times, the Dakshinamurti Shloka 3 times, and finally, the invocation to the goddess 3 times. Om Ganganapataye Namaha. 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 May all obstructions to our fully taking in the truth that is being revealed to us through this text be removed. Vakratunda Mahakaya Koti Surya Samaprabha Nirvignam Kurume Deva Sarva Karyeshu Sarvada Vakratunda Mahakaya Koti Surya Samaprabha Nirvignam Kurume Deva Sarva Karyeshu Sarvada Vakratunda Mahakaya Koti Surya Samaprabha Nirvignam Kurume Deva Sarva Karyeshu Sarvada. And now the Mahamrityunjaya. Om Trayambakaya Jamahe Sugandhim Pushti Vardhanam Urvarukamiva Vandhanan Mrityor Mukshiya Mamritat. Om Trayambakaya Jamahe Sugandhim Pushti Vardhanam Urvarukamiva Vandhanan Mrityor Mukshiya Mamritat. Om Trayambakaya Jamahe Sugandhim Pushti Vardhanam Urvarukamiva Vandhanan Mrityor Mukshiya Mamritat. Om. Om Trayambakaya Jamahe Sugandhim Pushti Vardhanam Urvarukamiva Vandhanan Mrityor Mukshiya Mamritat. And the invocation to Shiva as the primordial Guru. Gurave sarvalokanam visaje bhavaroginam nidaye sarvavidyanam dakshinamurtaye namaha. Gurave sarvalokanam Visaje bhavaroginam nidaye sarva vidyanam dakshinamurtaye namaha. Gurave sarvalokanam visaje bhavaroginam nidaye sarva vidyanam dakshinamurtaye namaha. And finally the invocation to she, the goddess Shakti, who is both the cause of this world, the cause of our bondage, and the cause of our awakening. Sarva mangala mangalye, Shive sarvatra sadike, Sharani trayambake gauri, Narayani namostute. Sarva mangala mangalye Shive sarvatra sadike Sharanye trayambake gauri Narayani namostute. Sarva mangala mangalye Shive sarvatra sadike Sharanye trayambake gauri Narayani namostute. And you can refresh your posture. Feel the breath as it flows. And notice if there are any places in your body that feel tense or tight. Ask them to soften. First, with your eyes closed, have the intention to recognize everything within your experience as contained in your awareness. And now open your eyes. And with your eyes open and your ears completely ready to take in any sounds, your senses absolutely open, as though you threw your senses outward to allow them to take in whatever wants to arise, whatever wants to be known or experienced. Notice how you tend to see and hear, and if fragrance is an aspect of your experience, smell a collection of very different objects, very different things. And notice how you naturally tend to see the room that you're in outside yourself. This is the way our senses and mind sort reality for us. Inside is me, outside is not me. So now ask yourself, where is all this really taking place? Where am I experiencing this room? Is my awareness present to what I'm experiencing? And is my awareness inside this room? Or is the room inside my awareness? Is my awareness inside this room? Or is the room inside my awareness? Does that question kind of shift your view? Can you see that your perception, that your experience of what seems to be outside you, is actually being held together by awareness, by your awareness? So see if you can be present to the fact that whatever you're experiencing is being contained inside your own awareness, your consciousness. It's your awareness that holds it together. Everything inside your field of vision and sound is actually being touched by awareness, is touching awareness, is inside awareness. And so, inside your awareness, the field of your experience, including your experience of the presence of all of us, it's all inside you. It's all one. So close your eyes, now keeping the sense of the room. Where is it now? And just be present to that paradox. The room and all of us in this field that we share, of course, have an independent existence. And yet at the same time, only your awareness makes it possible to experience what you're experiencing. And your experience really is inside your awareness. And if you like, you can open your eyes. In fact, I suggest that as you open your eyes, you do so with the intention to recollect that awareness does, in fact, encompass everything that you see and hear and think about. It is all inside your awareness. What we actually just did is a form of pratyahara, or withdrawal of attention, which, as you may remember, is, those of you who are familiar with the Yoga Sutras, pratyahara, or drawing your attention inside, is actually the first activity of the inner yoga. And part of what we see in this exercise is that inward-facing attention, withdrawing of attention, doesn't necessarily mean screwing your attention around so that you're looking inside your head, although that's also a practice. If you can recognize that what seems to be outside you is actually part of a single aware field that is your awareness, which is able to regard everything as well as everything else, you have actually turned your attention inside. Because by expanding your awareness such that you allow yourself to recognize that awareness includes everything, you are actually inside. And the more you can understand that everything is inside your awareness, the more you realize that you're never outside and nothing is ever outside you. This is a profoundly intimate universe. Because our attention has this deeply ingrained habit of focusing outward and making this distinction between me and not me, we become disconnected from awareness, even though it's powering our life. So in these contemplations, we again and again direct attention back onto itself in as many ways as we can. You know, teachers like me and like so many of you come up with these methods for getting awareness to be aware of itself, to touch that delicate, trembling, very alive intelligence, that knowingness, that cognizance. And there will be moments when awareness slips into the groove of being aware of itself and you take rest in it. And normally that only lasts for a few seconds, 10 or 15 seconds. So you keep going back to it. And we go back to it and we go back to it. And of course we notice that what takes us out of it inevitably is a thought. And usually the thought will be a commentary of some kind. Maybe you'll think, oh, I just recognized awareness as myself. But then you notice that the thought, I just recognized awareness, immediately separates you from awareness. And that, of course, shows you something, which is that the moment you have the thought, you separated yourself from awareness, because awareness doesn't make a distinction between itself and what you think of as me. Awareness knows that I am awareness. So the emergence of the separate I thought is an expression of jnanam bandha, the binding power of conceptual thinking, the second sutra of the Shiva Sutras. Because the moment that I thought arises, the immediacy of our contact with awareness slips away. And what arises, what comes into the foreground of our attention is this stream of thoughts. oh, this is what awareness is, or I had this feeling once before, or, oh my God, I'm not really getting it, or I'm tired and bored. I can't do this. Or this is so exciting. It doesn't really matter. All of these thoughts, the pleasant ones, the unpleasant ones, they're all jnanambandha. So this act of self-recursion, doubling back on yourself, replicates the fundamental experience of Shiva Shakti. And it also, when thinking manifests, it also replicates the arising of Maya, the veiling power that is one of Shakti's capacities. Because when Shakti comes to manifest individuality, she's always going to create a split in the experience of awareness. And our sadhana, the hardcore sadhana of the Shiva Sutras, especially the practices that are described in this first book, these first 20 sutras, is a subtle effort we make to experience our lives beyond the veil. That effort to see through the veil can feel impossible. It can feel like it's something we can't even really do, because it isn't something that we can do as an individual. But that power to make effort, which will eventually result in our recognition of the truth of what we are, is itself a ray of Shakti, an aspect of the primordial awareness. Because that same Shakti, which produces the thought that takes your attention away from awareness, is also the power that will eventually allow you to recognize awareness. One of the great Shaivite teachers, Maheshwarananda, gives a little meditation that we're going to return to again and again in the course of this evening. He says, here is how the error of people who think I am not the Lord is dissipated. One repeats to them, you are Shiva, gifted with the free power of consciousness and activity. So listen to this. This is the great sage dispelling our mistaken thinking. You are Shiva, gifted with the free power of consciousness and activity. This world depends on you as a kingdom on its king. It is in you that the world shines, in you that it resides. It is you as awareness that the world has as its basis, from which it arises and into which it is reabsorbed. Let me say this again. It is you as awareness that the world has as its basis, from which it arises and to which it is, and into which it is absorbed. Notice what happens in your body and mind when you hear this. Who is it that hears these words? Who is it that speaks them? Who asks the question? Who answers it? So how we make this real for ourselves, how we loosen the belief that this vast Shivaness, which the sages tell us is not only the source of the world, but is also your own awareness. How do you loosen the belief that this couldn't possibly be true? So we do it again and again by examining awareness. And as we examine awareness, we also get to see the incredibly slippery nature of that capacity for paying attention, which is allowing us to examine awareness. Attention is an aspect of awareness. We might call it an activity of awareness. But awareness itself is always the same. It's always stable. It's never not present. It never disappears. Attention, the activity of being aware, is always roving, roaming, glancing at one thing, then noticing something else. At the highest and subtlest level, the power of attention is one of the intrinsic shaktis of consciousness, the shakti of jnana, the shakti of knowing. At the human level, attention is your mind's power to focus. And as you know, focus tends to be moved towards one object, then another object, then another object. But even in its most subtle and exalted aspect, attention is shakti. So, this week, we're going to unpack the understanding that the Shiva Sutras give us about bondage, contraction. In Sutra 2, Jnanam Bandha, it says contraction is caused by knowledge, by jnana. In other words, by what you seem to know. And as is appropriate in a non-dual tradition, this word jnana, which occurs again and again in the Shiva Sutras, has several different meanings because jnana or knowledge exists at several different levels. At the highest level, jnana, as we said, is jnana shakti, the primordial power to know. Before manifestation, jnana shakti is Shiva's immediate knowing that about his own existence, her own existence. It's one of the innate powers of Shiva Shakti, along with the innate power to will and the innate power to act. But as awareness contracts, jnana also contracts. It's still there, but what it knows is not the wholeness. Instead of naturally knowing reality as your own awareness, your jnana shakti starts manifesting as ideas. And these ideas become the lens through which reality is viewed. In fact, your power of knowing becomes a kind of commentator. So for instance, when awareness regards itself, this power of knowing points out that what awareness is aware of is called awareness. Jnana, in other words, is constantly defining what would otherwise be indefinable. So jnana works through language to name experience. And the moment we name anything, we, in a certain sense, control it. We manage it. We tame it. The other day I was watching the U.S. soccer team playing in the World Cup with an 8-year-old boy who's obsessed with soccer. And he follows it, you know, the way kids, smart kids, are, you know, that amass, acquire knowledge and then become so proud of having knowledge. So anytime I would make a comment about one of the players, he would say, "I know that." And then he would do something like telling me Carly Lloyd's lifetime scoring record. And he was so proud of himself for knowing things. So knowing, this power of naming, is actually part of the way in which reality, which is otherwise borderless and boundaryless, gets structured. And we need to do this, obviously, in order to function in the world, and Shakti needs to do this in order to manifest a world. But of course, in making sense of the world, the immediacy of experience, the immediacy of awareness is cut up. So awareness in Shiva, in its Shivaness, has no parts, no attributes, no language, no description. But the power of knowing, the power of jnana, when it starts manifesting as words and categories, is what creates complexity. And this aspect of the text talks about this in the next two sutras, Sutra 2, and also the one we're going to talk about today, Sutra 4. Sutra 4 says, Jnanam Dishtanam Matreka, which means it is the ununderstood mother or power in sound which gives rise to limiting or binding knowledge. It is the ununderstood mother or power in sound which gives rise to ununderstood knowledge, to limiting knowledge. And the name that is given to the mother of sound is Matrika Shakti. So it's Matrika Shakti, the power of sound, which gives rise to false knowledge. However, what the sutra says, it's when we don't understand the nature of the power which is making false knowledge arise, it's when we don't understand who it is that's making thoughts and ideas arise, that we get bamboozled by them. So false knowledge, according to the sutras, is essentially any understanding that makes us believe that the world is outside us. And what this sutra says is that the source of this knowledge, Matrika Shakti, is another way of saying the source of false knowledge, the source of the idea that the world is outside us, is Maya, the deluding power within Shakti. So the ideas and thoughts about ourselves that obscure the truth of our real vastness are produced by Shakti. And if we understand that Shakti is the source of these ideas, simply understanding that will help dissolve them. And it's actually quite important to look into what lies behind this sutra, because the Shiva Sutras and the whole tradition that it gave rise to actually worships language, worships words, worships thoughts as Shakti. In other words, even though the sutra says it's the knowledge contained in words that deludes us and keeps us from recognizing the truth about ourselves, nonetheless, Shaivism doesn't demonize language. It doesn't believe that words are some weird demonic imposition shoehorned onto the innocence of pure awareness. In fact, this is one of the big differences between the Shaiva path and other Eastern traditions, because in Vedanta and in many forms of Buddhism, the forms that we know as the world are essentially considered a superimposition on consciousness. They're not considered real. A very famous Vedantic statement, the absolute is real, the world is unreal, and the individual soul is the absolute. In other words, consciousness is real, the world is unreal, and the individual soul is consciousness. Thoughts and feelings and ideas are all described as coverings, obscurations that act as a form of subtle pond slime, as it were, that hide the pure water of consciousness from view. And so the understanding about sadhana in these traditions is that it consists to a large extent of purifying the coverings, of removing the pond slime. And for many of us, when we get this teaching, it puts us right into some form of self-improvement sadhana. You know, if you've spent years trying to remove your own impurities, that usually means that you're rejecting most of your own thoughts and feelings, and even, you know, hating any manifestation of your personal ego. So what Shaivism does in correcting this misunderstanding is simply remind us that the thoughts that arise and seem to obstruct us are also made of Shakti. They're also made of this divine power that is actually the power behind awareness and bliss. The power in the mind is the power of Shakti, the same cosmic force that manifests universes. She's manifesting the mind. She's manifesting as thoughts. And as you'll remember, this is Non-Duality 101. In order to create a universe, Shakti limits and binds her own powers such that she believes herself to be limited. Shiva believes himself to be limited. Shiva is like an actor in The Lion King who puts on a hyena suit and convinces himself that he really is a hyena, at least for the duration of the play. And this is not an accident, remember, because you as Shiva Shakti have made a decision to limit your powers. Nobody forced you to do this. It's a choice. It's something that you've done for creative purposes, to make this play of the world. And she has understood that in order to make the oneness into a world, she can only make it out of her own body of awareness. There's nothing else to make a world out of. So in order to make multiplicity, she places these built-in restrictions on the amount of joy and power that she's able to experience. She carves her vastness up into these perfectly holographic miniature awarenesses and restricts their powers and their capacity for joy. And she does it by injecting these conceptual barriers, these different ways of knowing, this basic false knowledge, which are essentially a form of cosmic disinformation, cosmic propaganda, designed to make awareness, which is actually vast, which has no barriers, which has no boundaries, which has no limitations, through these conceptual barriers, consciousness bamboozles itself into believing that what is inside is actually outside, and that what is one awareness is actually many. And the primal barrier here is the conceptual illusion that there's a separation between your individual awareness and the vastness of the true self. That's what binding knowledge, jnanam bandha, really is. As many of you know, this primary conceptual misunderstanding is called anavamala, which means the obscuration of smallness. It's the idea that limits the radical ecstasy and contentment that is your birthright. And the presence of this anavamala, this primordial contraction, is the source of the existential discomfort that almost all of us feel. You know, the sense of lack, of being cut off, of not being quite okay. And of course, in every life, there are moments of joy and beauty when the world just seems to reveal itself as what it is. Because even limited and contracted and painful as we can sometimes believe our life and its essence is made of awareness and bliss. And there are many moments when we realize that, maybe during early romance or during a profound orgasm or while you're watching your baby sleep, or maybe the day after you've completed a difficult and challenging task and it's been successful. Or maybe it happens during meditation or while hearing a Beethoven symphony. And for people who do spiritual practice, of course, these moments happen regularly. And they're real glimpses of the truth. So right now, let's settle ourselves in a meditation posture. Let the awareness come to the breath. Take a deep breath in and let it go. Be aware now of the sensations that come to your attention. Some of these sensations may be pleasurable, some of them may be sensations of tightness. Let your attention move through your body, being present to sensations. Let a part of your attention focus now on the sound of my voice and on any other sounds that are coming into your awareness. Be aware of the sensuality of the breath. Enjoy the caress of the breath. Be aware of the thoughts as they dart up and dissolve. Recognize as you allow attention to cycle, to find its focal point in bodily sensation, in breath, in feeling how sound comes into your attention. In noticing the thoughts, And in being aware of the awareness that contains them all, maybe even recognizing that the sensations, the breath, the thoughts, are actually rising and falling within this subtle intelligence that we call awareness. Just let yourself be present with the way in which experience, sensory experience, sensation, breath, thinking, arises in and subsides back into awareness. This is really perfect meditation. Just letting yourself be present with whatever is arising. While recognizing that it is all coming and going within the field of your own conscious, intelligent knowingness, your own power to be aware. Attention flows you're aware of sensation, aware of breath, aware of sound and the content of what I'm saying, aware of the thoughts that arise in reaction, aware of the awareness that holds it all and allows you to experience it. Can you let yourself be awareness? Can you experience this subtle, supple knowingness as yourself? Can you experience how sensations and sounds and thoughts tickle that subtle field of awareness? And in just a moment, I'm going to ask you to open your eyes And once again, recognize that what you see through your vision, the room that you're in, is actually in you, in your awareness. Can you include the visual experience of being where you are as part of the arising of sensation within awareness? Thought, breath, sensation, felt sensation, visual sensation, oral sensation, sounds, all arising inside this one awareness. So here's the thing. Knowledge becomes false when it shows you that experience is outside you. Knowledge becomes true when you're able to recognize that all experience, including what appears to be outside, is actually inside. So how can you make use of the wonderful power of knowing without getting caught up in the knowledge that separates you from what you experience? Because after all, in order to function, we do need to discriminate, separate, create categories, think about things. So what's the secret of allowing this process of using your power of knowing things without separating what you know from what you are? This is what Sutra 4 wants to tell us. Jnanam Dishtanam Matrika. It is the ununderstood mother or power of sound that creates limited knowledge. And the operative word here is dishtana, which means ununderstood. Because what the sutra implies is that if you understand what it is that is creating your experience of limited knowledge, then your knowledge won't be limited anymore. So, in other words, what binds us is not the content. It's not the act of knowing. It's simply the fact that the power that gives rise to knowing, the power that gives rise to thoughts, is constantly pushing your attention away from its center and creating the illusion of separation. So the Matrika Shakti, the ununderstood mother of sound, is the initial expression of that famous aspect of Shakti that we call Maya, the power that conceals oneness and makes what is actually one great aware light appear to be millions of individual fragments. One of the mythological stories of how the world is created, tells how Shakti playfully covers the vertical third eye in the middle of Shiva's forehead. And remember, that third eye is the eye through which Shiva sees unity. So when Shakti covers it, Shiva's vision becomes blinded, and he no longer recognizes either Shakti or anything else as part of himself. So this gesture of Shakti blinding Shiva is, of course, a metaphor for what happens to awareness when Shakti expresses herself as Maya, the veiling power that conceals the real nature of things. When Shakti blinds Shiva, she also binds him. She dissolves his vision of unity, which also happens to be her own vision of unity. And as a result, metaphorically speaking, these two inseparable lovers are literally torn apart. Awareness and bliss separate, which is one reason why very often, you know, as spiritual seekers, we experience witness consciousness. In other words, we're able to stand apart from the world and observe it without being emotionally involved. But often in that witness consciousness, it's just a kind of a neutral feeling. There's no experience of joy. And this is one of the signs that awareness and bliss have been separated. And where Shiva and Shakti have been one single, incredibly delighted awareness, literally trembling with ecstasy, Shiva now appears as a void, pure emptiness with no affect, just present. And Shakti can no longer feel him or see him, and she's terrified, and then she feels herself, as it were, falling through infinite spaces, and she begins to call out, Om. And this primordial sound, Om, becomes millions of different sound fragments, each filled with Shakti's primordial creative power, which create ripples in the vastness of Shiva's void that condense into worlds. Some of the sounds manifest as time and space. Some of them manifest as universes where there is no time and space. Some manifest as deities, some as healing mantras, others as obstructive forces. Others manifest as beings with different forms, and this is all before the physical plane has come into existence. Every one of these vibratory resonances that Shakti is emitting is a hologram of information, an information packet that will later manifest as different aspects of what we know as reality, from the subtle essences we call souls or beings to the physical forms of planets and stars. And inherent in all these holograms, all these little packets of information, is the experience of being separate from the wholeness. And from this fundamental idea of separation come all the other ideas that bind us. And I don't believe any of us fails to understand how ideas bind us. And the truth is that yoga, as well as the modern self-help movement, really bases itself on the understanding that most of the ideas we have about life and about reality are actually not true, and actually help make us miserable. Certain ideas and memories make us miserable. And therefore, that it's very important to get rid of the ideas that bind us, you know, to replace them with better ideas, ideas that make us happier. What they often don't realize is that behind all the ideas that specifically make us unhappy are these deeper ideas, these deeper forms of conditioning that are an intrinsic part of language itself. But again, as you know, the Indian tradition understands that language, sound, is the source of matter. It's the source of creative matter. This universe arises out of vibrating strings of sound, which arise within the primordial Shakti as she manifests worlds. And in Sanskrit language mysticism, every single vowel and every single consonant is considered to hold a creative Shakti, a creative power, which gives rise to the psychic and physical worlds. These creative sound vibrations are known as seed syllables or bija mantras. Om is the most famous, but we're all, those, you know, all of you are familiar with many of the others. Mantras like Aim, Reem, Im, Shreem, which are often associated with deities, but which actually also operate as the powers within entire spheres of existence. In other words, the mantra Aim is associated with Saraswati, the goddess of speech, but in a larger sense, in the world, it also empowers music, poetry, and insight. The mantra Shreem is a name or a sound that's associated with the goddess Lakshmi, but it also intrinsically carries the vibration of harmony, of beauty, of abundance. In other words, these qualities are contained inside the sounds, and that's really the insight about the creative power of language and sound. Each of these mantras, each of these sounds is, as we said, an information packet filled with power and knowledge. And, you know, actually the Sanskrit-speaking sages were not the only sages who saw words as a source of reality. The same idea is in the Hebrew wisdom traditions, especially in Kabbalah. And the same understanding that that sound is a living energy, that particular sounds actually contain powerful intelligence, which don't just resonate in the cosmos as sounds we can hear, but actually have the power to manifest dense physical reality. And again, this is not a tantric idea. It exists in all traditions. You know, if you take what is probably the most famous line in the book of Genesis, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Once you start understanding the tantric teachings about language, you start to wonder whether this line is actually a metaphor for the creative process that begins when speech arises out of Shakti during the process of creative manifestation, in which these primal sounds combine to form mantras, which then, imbued with the direct power of Shakti in her creative frenzy, create manifest reality in the physical world. I mean, we don't know if the sages who wrote the Hebrew Bible actually had visions of light arising out of sound and then condensing into matter. The sages of the Vedas, however, were very clear about that, and they describe how in the beginning these subtle sounds called nada arise within the primordial ether and then evolve into a single primordial point of light called a bindu, which then expands to become physical universes. And if you're familiar with quantum physics and the cosmological theories surrounding the Big Bang and the expanding universe, you see that there is some congruence between the idea that there's a primordial vibration that is at the source of manifestation and the understanding that at a certain point in time, a vibration exploded to become a universe. So we could say that just as the Big Bang arose within the void of pure consciousness or pure Shakti and manifested a physical universe, the powers within language explode into the awareness of a human being and contract that awareness, shape it into particular thoughts and feelings and experiences of personal identity and ideas about the world. Jnanam Dishtanam Matrika, limited knowledge, the knowledge of limitation, the knowledge of contraction, is the result of not understanding the Matrika Shakti, the divine power that gives rise to language and sound. So let's just consider this for a moment, the way it manifests in experience. Close your eyes and enjoy the flow of breath. Begin to notice that along with the breath flowing, there's also a part of you that is noticing the breath, that is commenting on the breath, that is understanding that what is happening is breathing, and that also very well may be coming up with random thoughts. With your eyes closed, look into what appears in front of your closed eyes. Look into the suchness of your inner field of consciousness. You might see little squibs of light, but also you probably notice that there are words being formed here. Or maybe they're not even words, maybe they're just movements that have a quality of language to them. You may not even be aware of the meaning. Maybe the thought that's coming up is, I don't know what she's talking about, or I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking at, or looking for. So if what is coming up is a feeling of uncertainty or a feeling of trying to point your attention in a particular direction, see if you can be aware of where that thought or that movement is coming from. Above all, see if you can notice how this thought, this field that we call the mind, this field that we call our inner consciousness, is constantly moving. It's constantly becoming something. It takes form as an image or as a thought. And there's nothing that you have to do to make this happen. It's happening by itself because your inner field of consciousness is intrinsically, constantly in motion, creating something. So what is it that's making your mind field so active? And I'm going to ask you to do something rather radical. See if you can dive right into the middle of this mind field and look for the source of movement in the mind. Where is it coming from? Can you see that there actually is an impulse at the root of the mind, which if you keep turning your attention inside and looking for the source of thinking or the source of movement in the mind, that you begin to realize that there's this kind of, this kind of fountain of energy that is surging upward in the form of thoughts or emotions or simply a sense of movement? That the mind, this field of the mind, is never really still. It's always producing something. So what is it that is making the mind move, or what is it that is acting through the thought, the mind stuff? This is what is called the Matrika Shakti. This fountain of energy that spouts upward in your mind. Can you make it stop? Can you make that fountain of movement that's forming thoughts and images, or just giving the experience of churning and movement, can you make it stop? Maybe some of you can make it stop for a couple of seconds. But if you really look into what's going on in your own internal mind field, you probably notice that even if there aren't any coherent thoughts being formed, that there's still movement. And that moving quality in the mind is the signature of the Matrika Shakti. The word Matrika means little mother. And it specifically connotes the powers behind the different classes of phonemes, the sound syllables like ba and cha and sa and ma that make up spoken language. And what you notice is that the Matruka Shakti does not have to be forming coherent words to be functioning. These sounds, which will eventually, in your mind and my mind, form words, these sound syllables, are what the sages call the powers that give rise to all forms of knowledge. In other words, nothing can be known unless it comes in the form of language. Nothing can be known as an object unless it comes in the form of language. And in the tradition, these sound syllables, the matrikas, are considered to be goddesses. They're considered to be powers, independent powers, that are all subsumed under the governance, as it were, of the great goddess, the Matruka Shakti herself. And again, the thing that I always take from this teaching is that words are never casual, because words, the sounds that form words, always have the power to change reality. They can cut it up, or they can bring it together. And in fact, in the language mysticism of Tantra, every different class of syllables, every different aspect of language is associated with a particular goddess, and the Tantras give the names of the goddesses. They have names like Brahmi, Maheshwari, Chandani, familiar names. And they're actually in many ceremonies of worship performed by Brahmin priests. These matrikas are worshipped because they're the powers that make our words bear fruit. They're what make us able to communicate with each other. So the insight of this sutra, Jnanam Dhishtanam Matruka, is language is a direct expression of the creative impulse of Shakti, and it always acts in one or two ways. It conceals oneness behind the flow of sound and meaning, but it can also reveal oneness by dissolving the structures that hide it. And the way we get the Matruka Shakti to reveal oneness is to recognize that everything that arises in the mind is an aspect of goddess. When we fail to understand the mother, the Matruka Shakti, the goddess Shakti, who's the source of language and thought, our ideas and thoughts confuse us. You know, and the confusion that we experience in approaching this teaching is actually a product of the Matruka Shakti, which tends to want to create smoke screens whenever an individual comes close to seeing through the veils of Maya. And the smoke screens that Matruka Shakti produces generally look like confusion. This is confusing. This doesn't make sense. Actually, in a certain way, it doesn't make sense, because Matruka Shakti is before sense. Matruka Shakti is the source of sense. It's what allows language to make sense. So those of you who have studied with me for a while know that I often tell an anecdote about how I came to understand this, and it's an anecdote about my guru. This comes from something that he said way back in the early days of my practice with him. I was just starting to meditate, and of course, my mind would never get quiet, so I never felt like I was really getting into meditation. And then one day during a talk, my guru said, why do you keep chasing the mind, trying to make it quiet? Don't you know that the mind is the goddess herself? Her nature is to constantly create, and just as she creates worlds in the cosmos, when she becomes your mind, she creates endless worlds of thoughts and feelings. So don't try to fight your mind. Fighting your mind is fighting the goddess. And how are you ever going to stop the goddess? She is the most powerful force in the universe. So his advice for working with your own thoughts, and it's a piece of advice that, though I forget it constantly, whenever I remember it, it immediately frees me. And it will do that for you as well. To deal with your own thought stream, your own confusion, your own unhappiness, your own overexcitement, your own worries, your own fears, recognize that behind all thoughts and feelings is the activity of Shakti, of Matrika Shakti. She is manifesting as you and manifesting as your mind. And all you have to do is recognize her and honor her. All you have to do is recognize her and honor her, and she'll shift the way you're experiencing her. For a while, the mind might keep spinning, but the deluding power in its spinning will stop giving you pain, will stop bamboozling you, will stop confusing you. As soon as you see through the surface of what's going on in the mind to the impulse beneath the content, the endlessly moving, ecstatic power of Shakti manifesting as thoughts in your mind. So, Jnanam Dhishtanam Matrika, to paraphrase or retranslate it, it's only when we don't understand the power behind our thinking, the power behind our contraction, it's only when we don't understand it, when we don't see the Shakti in it, that it causes suffering. As soon as we can really recognize the sacred quality of the energy that is making thoughts arise, a deep and growing relaxation will begin to fill you. And your meditation will stop being a matter of effortfully trying to focus on something that feels like it's somehow outside of you. It will become more and more of an experience of just relaxing into the movement and the flow of your own Shakti. So whether you follow the breath or use your attention to become aware of awareness, it'll become easier and easier to just open to what is and to allow yourself to be delighted by your own inner world and its creativity, and the way in which a negative thought can simply resolve itself and dissolve and disappear. If you look at it as an expression of Shakti, rather than focusing and believing in its content. So once again, turn your attention back to the mind. Focus on the field of your own inner consciousness, the field of energy that reveals itself when you turn in. And now you're not making any attempt to become aware of awareness, though for many of you, this simple act of turning inside is going to make awareness become conscious of itself. But notice how creative your mind stuff is. It's just constantly forming itself into images and thoughts. It's flowing, it's moving. Honor that power. Turn towards it. See if you can notice how even before a thought becomes a coherent, articulated thought, it's an impulse. There's this impulse to movement. And as you look back into your mind, you may notice that your attention kind of sinks into the body, and you start to be aware that the impulse to thinking actually comes from someplace around the solar plexus or the heart. That is, the source of the mind, the source of thinking, is really deep inside what you think of as your body. What I'm suggesting is that if you can actually turn into the original impulse to think, to move, which is deeper than the headspace, it's somewhere between the heart and the solar plexus, and that if you can let your attention start to center in the source of the impulse to think, it actually does start to quiet the mind. In other words, if you can turn towards the impulse of the Matrika Shakti, perhaps even with the question, what is the source of thinking? You actually become much more aware of the energy within thought rather than the content. And then if you let the impulse to think arise, it will become an actual thought. And of course, because we're meditating it, it may be quite an exalted thought. But one of the qualities that most of us discover when we observe the mind is that the actual content of most of our thoughts is fairly repetitive. Most of us, most of the time, are thinking the same group of thoughts. And the thoughts that we repetitively think are actually signs of the habits that have been carved into our consciousness over years and years and years of believing our thoughts. As the Matrika Shakti keeps throwing up thoughts, and as we keep following the thoughts and believing their content, the power inside the Matrika cuts channels in the field of your mind stuff. And therefore, your attention keeps falling again and again and again into those channels. And it's these channels that determine your character and your nature. I've recently been spending time with a friend of mine who was very, very hurt by one of his associates. And for the last 10 days, he's been calling me a couple of times a day to talk about how much pain he's in over this broken relationship. And basically, he's saying the same thing again and again and again, though every time he says it, he feels like it's new. But what I've been getting is a demonstration of how when we keep dwelling on the same thoughts, the power of thought creates channels in consciousness. And whether it's a channel of grief or a channel of anger, same thought held again and again and again is actually going to create a tendency, a samskara or a vasana. And that becomes the lens through which you see the world. My friend at this moment is seeing the world through a lens of hurt feelings, unfairness, anger. And yet the interesting thing is that if we can manage to shift the conversation during this same phone call, he'll be laughing and talking about something else, and his entire mood will lift. Because the quality of Shakti, in her form as Matrika, her incredibly powerful but subtle form as Matrika, is never stuck. You may think that you're stuck. You may think that she's stuck. But once you understand that it's the Matrika Shakti, the power of the primordial creative impulse, who is always making new things in this universe, new ideas, new experiences, new moments, then it becomes very possible to shift your thinking out of the negative, emotionally difficult groove and into another space. We can do this. Shakti can do it. And once we're willing to not believe the content of a thought, to recognize that the content of a thought is just a particular arrangement of sound forms that creates an effect in our consciousness, which gives rise to an emotion. And once we can see that this is just something that Shakti is doing within us, and not take it so seriously, then we start to realize that it's all just a play. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all this game that she's playing. And once you can recognize the Matrika, and even begin to recognize how these patterns, which you've been creating and holding on to for so many years, are just there. They're just arising and subsiding. they're not real because awareness is what's real. And as you keep retraining the matrika to recognize what it is, even as it is creating thinking, as you keep retraining the matrika to recognize itself as the dynamism of awareness rather than as a scary thought that you have to pay attention to, as soon as you can start to recognize the energy in your own mind is the dynamism of awareness, then you can actually use that energy to be aware of awareness. Or to dive into a mantra. Or any of the myriad practices that Shakti has created in order to reveal herself to herself. When we fail to understand the power of the Matrika Shakti, the power of our mental energy, she binds us. She makes us fall into these basic binding ideas like, I'm powerless, I'm stupid, I have to be successful, otherwise nobody will like me. Whatever it is, these coverings that cut you off from your wholeness. As soon as you remember to move yourself out of being deluded by these ideas and let them fall back into the sea of awareness from which they arose, then the same Shakti which has contracted you will begin to expand your consciousness to self-recognize. My guru once said, you create a world in your mind and then you live in it. But these creations are not realities. They're just thoughts. They're just vibrations. They're just mind energy. And when these thoughts subside again inside the space of awareness, then the mood, the feelings, and the dilemmas they created for you dissolve along with them. Once you understand that the power at the root of your mind is the power of the primordial Shakti, then you get to do the fundamental tantric gesture, which is to align yourself with the power of Shakti and then allow her to align you with the truth. So we're going to do that right now with one of the really great contemplative practices that the tantras give us and that many of you have practiced, which is the practice of asking yourself a question and allowing the Matrika Shakti to bring forth an answer from the depths of yourself. And the question that we're going to practice with is one of the great questions. It's a question that is intended to point the Matrika Shakti back towards herself, back towards her source, back towards her beloved, the pure awareness, Shivanas, who, remember, has never changed, has never been affected by this process, and who is essentially there just waiting for Shakti to rejoin him so that the two of them can delight in each other. So here's the question. If I don't use words or ideas or memories, if I don't fall into an emotion or a mood, what am I? Without thoughts, without ideas, without emotions, without memories, without agendas or intentions, oh goddess, what am I really? If I don't use words, if I don't use thoughts, if I don't use ideas, if I don't have agendas or intentions, what am I? Let the Matrika Shakti, in the form of that question, guide attention into her source. What am I? If I don't believe the content of my thoughts, what am I? Without words, ideas, memories, emotions. And as thoughts come up, as distractions arrive, as you lose it and come back to it, remind yourself, everything that I experience inside this mind field and everything that I see around me is an expression of the primordial Shakti, whose nature is awareness and bliss. This is me. Shivoham Shaktiham, I am that. Allow the Matrika Shakti to empower that understanding. My awareness is the divine awareness. My energy is the divine energy. Myself is the divine self. Chidananda Rupam, Shivoham, Shivoham, I am that. Let yourself simply sit with the intention to be aware of awareness and the recognition that whatever arises inside awareness is an expression of the primordial goddess Shakti, the infinite creativity that is what you are. You are awareness. You are power. You are love. You are Shiva. You are Shakti. This is the truth. This is why you're here. As the breath flows, as your attention cycles between sensations and thoughts and breath, just let yourself be as you are. What you are is never not divine. What you are is never not divine. What you are is never not divine.
मनोबुद्ध्यहङ्कारचेतानि नाहि न च श्रोत्रजिह्वेन च घ्राणनेत्रे न च व्योमभूमेन तेजो न वायु चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूप शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न च
Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week, notice the movements of the mastika, don't forget who you are. You You are consciousness and bliss. You are awareness and love. This is our meditation.
न मे द्वेषरागौ न मे लोभमोहौ मदो नैव मे नैव मात्सर्यभाव न धर्मो न चार्थो न कामो न मोक्ष चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं न पुण्यं न पापम् न सौख्यं न दुःखम् न मन्त्रो न तीर्थं न वेदा न यज्ञा अहं भोजनं नैव भोज्यं न भोक्ता चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं अहं निर्विकल्पो निराकाररूपो विभूत्वाच्च सर्वत्र सर्वेन्द्रियाणां न चासङ्गतं नैव मुक्तेर्न मे चिदानं शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं चिदानन्दरूपा शिवोऽहं 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 शिवोऽहं